tsunami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 475 of the Tsunami Escape Podcast. I'm C. Kohler, and with me tonight is Seda.
Hello.
And Crocodile.
Good evening.
Welcome back, guys. We've got a regular lineup this week, nothing out of the ordinary. We're kind of stuck into this lineup for a little bit. We've still got a little ways to go with Rooster Fighter, a few more episodes at least.
But the next show on the block will be Superman.
Yep.
Once Rooster Fighter ends.
Speaking of Superman, let's talk about briefly the news here. And one thing I had was that they did debut this weekend a new promo during Toonami. I think they did it during the week too, but it was on Toonami. A new promo for this season of Superman kind of showed a little bit more and some of the things we had discussed possibly happening are in it. Like, for example, they're debuting Superboy. We saw that sort of dark Superman, mechanical Superman, cyborg, or something.
Superman or something, whatever that's going on with that.
Yeah, something about that. Cool stuff. And then we saw the new Supergirl has a new like outfit now. And yeah.
One thing I'll mention this that stood out to me, like we already knew it had to premiere on Toonami given when the premiere date and time they said was, but they actually said so in the promo premiering on Toonami, which is again a contrast from prior seasons that premiered outside Toonami and then reran on Toonami. This one is premiering on Toonami and then the advertising is saying as much. Again, we figured it out from the timing, but the advertising saying as much, I think, is a noticeable change.
Yeah, it literally says, premiering, it says on Toonami next day on HBO Max. Is what it basically they have.
Yeah,
put it.
It's good to see that because, like I said in last week, I think we in the poster didn't mention it, but it's nice to hear them like actually pimping Toonami during the promo. So good stuff.
This is one of those things where like I don't have like the meter for it, but I'm looking at the upload for this trailer, this promo on Adult Swim's YouTube. It went up, 5 days ago, and already has 500,000 views. That feels like a fair bit.
Hmm.
Like that's just more than I expected, but yeah, Superman's popular.
Well, it's hard to like gauge about any like metrics or comparisons, but
yeah, I mean, exactly.
Just in the dark, that's like a decent number.
Yeah, when I'm scrolling through like Reddit stuff, like just random things, I know this a couple of times where people would just offhand mention this show, and it kind of made me think, oh, okay. I mean, it wasn't a huge deal; it was just like a comment here or there. But I was just like, oh yeah, people were aware of this show. This is this had some popularity to it. So good stuff. Another piece of news we'll talk about briefly here is, unfortunately, we had another great voice actor pass away. This time it was Tom Kane. Tom Kane was known very well as the voice of Dr. Utonium on Powerpuff Girls. Seda, I think you said he'd also done some voices in the Clone Wars animation.
Tom Kane is one of those voice actors where even if you don't recognize the name, if you're like a millennial, you probably recognize the voice because he was in a bunch of like 90s Cartoon Network shows. Like he was Professor Utonium. He was in like Cow and Chicken and did like bit voices throughout a bunch of shows like in that era. And he's also was like in almost all of like anything Star Wars animated or even some like games in like the 90s and 2000s. He did like narration voice. He has a very unique voice, like you would recognize it. And he was in like Clone Wars, for example. He did like all like the narration in Clone Wars and like bit characters. He was also like Monkey Fist in Kim Possible, if you watch that, kind of a recurring villain in that show. So he was in like if you're a millennial and if you watch cartoons as a kid, you heard this guy. I think that's almost unavoidable. So
yeah, I'm looking at his resume here on Wikipedia, and you're not kidding about the Star Wars. And it's not just animated. It's like tons and tons of Star Wars games. He was a voice in tons of games related to Star Wars. But again, all sorts of things, not just Star Wars. But I'm seeing so much of Star Wars here. He really was heavily into that franchise.
Yeah, no matter how you cut it, it's an immense loss for entertainment, everything. I'm obviously his family and friends, but it's just immense loss of talent, and we all wish him well in the afterlife.
Yeah, yeah, it's unfortunate. I also want to mention briefly here that he did win the 2016 award for best vocal ensemble in the Lego Dimensions video game. He was nominated for a bunch of stuff that he did in Clone Wars. Oh.
I saw some people mentioning that he did like an Ultron voice in some media, like Marvel versus Capcom or something. Like he's been in some Marvel stuff too. So he's got a wide breadth of stuff he's done. And like, it's one of those also just kind of full circle things. Like his last Instagram post was him reuniting with the voice actresses for the Powerpuff Girls.
Oh, well.
You know, that's just kind of a, you know, that's a sentimental moment that he was able to reunite with them like recently, like within the last year.
Yeah. So, and if you're curious, listeners, he passed away. He'd had a stroke back in 2020. So he just recently passed away because of complications due to that. So yeah, my heart goes out to that. And, we lost another great, voice actor. The good thing about voice actors on the whole, no, they're not all perfect, but the majority of them all seem pretty cool. And, it's unfortunate to lose somebody like this.
Oh, and one last thing. I also did not know this, but I think this speaks about his character more than like anything, any other individual thing. Like in his like eulogies people had for this person, it was brought up many times that like he had 3 children with his wife, but then he also like adopted 6 more children through adoption or foster care.
Wow.
And like that is like, what type of person are you? Like that type of character you have to take on that responsibility to raise 6 more children as your own. I think that speaks to his character more than any other individual bullet.
Yeah, I have no idea. About him. The man's kind of a baller.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay. Well, that's all I had for the news this week. So let's get into the block rundown, and we'll begin, of course, with Rooster Fighter. Rooster Fighter Episode 10, To Back a Bird into a Corner. All right. So this demon guy with the sort of gun arm, his name is Yuji, and he is fighting our chicken heroes here, and they're kind of taunting each other, and then he ends up killing the demons, the smaller level demons, and then he transforms. He becomes like more powerful.
That's a rocket launch arm. Very important.
Yeah. Yeah. He becomes way bigger, stronger. Kisuke fights him, and he's not able to do a whole lot of damage. He is, you know, this Yuji guy is just sort of like scoffing at him and stuff.
Yeah. This is basically a big battle episode. So, you know, this guy gets bigger. He's shooting rocket things. Kisuke and Keiji are trying to like do anything, but they're at least to start the episode, they aren't really able to find much success.
Yeah. Keiji does arrive. He joins in the battle and helps Kisuke fight this guy. We cut back to Pyoko, who we last saw last week, opening
dying.
Her eye.
Not dying.
She gets up and she has a conversation with some kind of entity that is controlling her body now. And my comment here is that she has a tailed beast.
Yeah, she's activated Myangeko Sharingan last episode, and now she's Jinchuriki, excuse me. So it's just kind of one thing into another with this woman.
And I don't remember exactly what the voice said, but it was pretty explicit in like, I'm going to take over your body now. Like,
yeah.
Like possession.
Yeah, it was very, very Jinchuriki-esque in that way.
Yeah, I always hate to be like, I want to be like, invoke the boss baby meme and like, oh, everything is just Naruto, because that's the last thing we saw or whatever, but it does feel like everything is Naruto here. Like, trying not to, but it's just like, you can't help it.
We cut back to, I think this is the last we see of
Pyoko in this episode. Yeah, we don't see what happens with this
Yeah, she Pyoko, like, I guess basically kills a parasite inside Morio. She like ignites the nail she had and just massacres the parasite.
But then we don't come back to this. Yeah,
correct.
Not yet.
It's all rest of the episodes just Keisuke, Keiji, and Elizabeth is there too, trying to help, but kind of mostly commentating against the Yuji is his name, right? The gun.
Yeah, Yuji, the demon. Yeah,
Or the devil. Excuse me, devil.
Oh yeah, I should be clear. A devil, right? They're fighting. There's a funny moment in the battle where because they're kind of commenting on the fact that this guy seems to have unlimited ammo, and then he finally does like run out and he's like, oh, I gotta reload. And then everybody has like a shot where they're like, he's out of ammo, he's out of ammo, he's out of ammo.
You have a chance. You're saying there's a chance.
Random comment. I find it kind of very mildly amusing that like in Japanese, sometimes like you just say the word like chance. In English, like the English word chance, just they sometimes you'll just hear them say that. Even in like a Japanese dub, they'll just say chance. Yeah. And that just sort of means like they just say one word, like chance or chansu or whatever. But that just means like now is our chance or this is our chance or whatever. So they've kind of like adopted that word.
Yeah.
So it's kind of amusing.
Oh, yeah. There's another thing like that. I can't remember off the top of my head what it was.
There's a couple of words. Like I know sometimes you'll hear. I know sometimes you'll hear, like, in a Japanese dub, they'll say, like, level up, poo, or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some borrowed English word that I can't think of off the top of my head that I hear every once in a while when I'm watching Japanese subtitled. And I'm just like, oh, that's kind of a funny thing they do where they just say the word. It's not even a sentence. Yeah. Anyway. So this guy, he has a solution to his ammo problem. He just literally grabs a big box of ammo and eats it. He eats the explosives, and that allows him to create more.
This reminds me of what is it? Bill from One Piece eating bullets or whatever? Was that it?
How dare you besmirch the name of Bill? Anyway, the Keiji has a plan. This guy's shooting out these like homing missiles that are like heat-seeking missiles now.
Yeah, they gain eyes, so they actually like, can see their targets now.
Oh, I didn't even notice that. Okay.
Yeah, so I don't know if it's heat-seeking so much as the missiles are just, like, looking at sentient. The chickens and chasing them down.
Okay. Well, Keiji, like, runs up onto this devil named Yuji, and the stuff hits him, and the guy's kind of like, well, that was stupid. You killed yourself for nothing. And then Keiji's like, nah, that was my plan. And apparently he, like, had, like, somehow gotten some piece of metal or something and was opened the inside of him.
Yeah, first of all, there's some pretty decent animation in this section.
Oh, yeah.
Like the missile trailing behind the chickens.
Yeah, I would say like legit Sakuga during a good portion of this fight. But what happened is that Keiji was dodging the missiles, grabbed, uses Kekeko, Koko, whatever you want to call it, beam, to shatter some metal scaffolding, grabbed a piece of it, then ran after Yuji, doing his what seemed to be a suicide run. He used the Kekeko beam again against Yuji, and he was saying, oh, it barely affects me because of my armor, whatever he was saying. He, like, you know, has some armor he has on. But Keiji was doing was using it on the piece of metal he had in his hand, and like about to, because we know that his sonic voice can shatter stuff like metal given the right frequency and whatnot. So he used this beam to like basically superheat or supercharge his metal, and he brought it with him inside the barrel of the demon, the devil who he thought he had blown up, and then just threw that metal into the deep barrel of the cannon arm, and it exploded, yeah. And then that exploded his arm off, and then with his arm exploded off, he kind of dissipated his armor, and at that point, KSK could do his finishing move, the chicken flaming combo dinner,
chicken kick,
up kick or whatever.
Yeah, it's like the flaming chicken leg, I think is what it's called, or something like that.
It is something chicken leg. Yeah,
something chicken leg. I remember that because that's funny. All right. Yeah. So this guy is defeated, but then up comes walking that boy we've seen before. His name is Hikari, and he comes walking up, smirking. Then we get the commercial. After that, we get a flashback where we see a younger, well, maybe not that much younger, but anyway, it's in the past. Keisuke is being given the power to fight from his father. We learn some stuff about their abilities here. They talk about that their family is entrusted with the power of the righteous egg, and that this father kind of like pushes his chest up to Keisuke, and then like there's like this glowing that happens, and they call this the Phoenix Flame. and he gets this Phoenix Flame ability unlocked in him.
And the father also mentions that, like, not everyone has it. Not even everyone in the family has it. It's just like one out of every 10 or something like that. It's some fraction. Mm. So the father has it. Kisuke has this righteous egg. Like, it's like they literally mention, like, it's like in their gizzard or something.
Yeah, it has to do with their gizzard.
It's like what gives him his, like, Kaioken powers or whatever they are. But like Keiji may not have that specific ability, but obviously he has like a different one. I don't know how deep you want to get into like the mechanics of it, but yeah, this righteous egg is like this power that gives him that like inner blue flame power stuff.
Yeah.
I feel like a similar thing happened. It kind of reminds me of comparing to some other series a bit when, the elder unleashed Gohan and Krillin's power back on Namek. And I think something similar happened to Gon and Killua and Hunter Hunter 2, didn't it? Or something about that sort? Like, using their energy to kind of awaken someone else's energy? I feel like
that's a pretty common trope. Like, the untapped potential energy within you is released or opened up, yeah.
Yeah.
We cut back to the fight, where the fight's occurring, and we learn from this boy Hikari what they're doing, and we learn that this is where the devils come from, is that they're actually turning demons into devils. They're collecting the demons, and then I don't know if that's how they procreate or what, but they're basically turning demons into devils.
He literally mentions that, like, they want to rule the world. Like, I don't know if there's any nuance to that at all. They're just like, we want to make more devils. We, like, turn demons into devils, and we want to rule the world.
Yeah, I think this did a good job. Like, we know, like, there's only a few more episodes left in the season. We don't know if there are going to be any more seasons, but I think this episode sets a good groundwork for future seasons, because they're basically saying, we're devils, we're international, we're all over the world. And so, like, this obviously opens up I assume Keiji and the crew will beat Hikari and Mom or whatever, or maybe she escapes, we're unclear, but there's definitely more devils out there in the world, so there's definitely more trials for them to do, and more, who knows how many more opponents for them to fight. So this definitely sets a scale for the future, should we ever get more of this series.
Kisuke takes on Hikari here, and they're just, fighting. It's, again, more fighting. Like Seda said, this is a very battle-heavy episode. During their fight, Hikari kind of mentions that he knows about the righteous egg, and he's like, oh, you've even using your power of your righteous egg. Like, these devils know about that. And then my next comment is that Kisuke goes even further beyond.
Yeah, this is very shonen anime, which, that's not a criticism, but it's just like, Kisuke like thinks to himself, like a flashback, and his dad is like, now you're not allowed to go beyond, like, whatever his power is called. I forget what it's called. Like, times three. Don't go beyond times three.
It's
limit.
Kaioken, basically.
Yeah, it's I actually wrote in my note Kaioken. Like, it's Kaioken.
Yeah. Exactly that.
And like, don't go beyond times three. And then he's like, I have to go beyond. This is my last attack. Times four. Times five. And like, very, very shonen anime. Like, he's going beyond
gets
the
to
list.
10. He ultimately gets to 10. This another reference that this reminded me of was Rock Lee unlocking his whatever those are called.
See, everything is
the eight gates of death or something, or the eight chakra gates.
Yeah,
they're like sixth gate open, seventh gate open. Yeah. That thing.
I think I got up to five in that one, but yeah, like, okay, he was like, now he's ready, and then no gate. Rock Lee went even further beyond that.
So yeah, I mean, this show, if you're gonna ape like tropes from anime, at least you're picking the good ones, you know what I mean? Like, you're picking the top tier tropes here that you're doing in this show.
And again, pretty good animation in this moment with all the power effects.
I think there's some good impact frames. The flame on his chest got huge. Yeah, it was pretty dynamic and cool energy.
I would say that, like, this episode in particular looked better than average that for this show, but I've never thought this show looked bad at all. Like, I think this show is it's a good looking show. I wouldn't say it's like one of my favorite looking shows, but it's like, I think I came in with some trepidation being like, oh, is this going to look cheap? It definitely does not look cheap. Although I will say, I'll just put it out there. Even though I'm pretty big fan of like CG, and like I don't get upset about like CG anime. I do think the human faces in this show are a little weak sometimes.
Yeah, I agree.
But
I think it works great. Actually, I think the CG anime decision for this property works pretty well in the context of like the chickens and the monsters, but the humans are definitely where it's like the most, you know, again, I don't think it's like terrible, but it's like that. I think that's probably the weakest point is like the
human animation. It is. And, you know, it's funny because like, I don't remember that girl from a few episodes ago looking bad. It's more like these demons in particular don't look that great, or devils, excuse me. God, these devils.
Yeah, and semantics, human, they're not humans, but they're humanoid. But.
Right.
You think the animation for them is poor, or like stuck out to you as kind of being subpar?
No, it's more like their character design. Like, I think that their character models aren't particularly good looking. In the face, they just look kind of plastic doll like. And whereas, like, the chickens and the roosters just look great to me. They look good. I think the humans just look kind of, the devils kind of look kind of generic or cheap in the faces. That's all. It's a minor complaint because I think otherwise, I think this show is well directed, and I think it has good color use, and I think it. I love when they do the dramatic still frames and all that stuff. Like, that's all good stuff. It's a good looking show. Anyway, we'll finish off this episode when we had the last attack after Kisuke uses his unlocking the 10th seal or whatever. He does the attack, but then we see that Hikari is just standing there. He does look different, but he has survived the attack.
Yeah, he basically transformed, and with that transformation or buffed the attack. But of course, it's shown in trope. So we knew Kisuke wasn't going to succeed here, so.
Yeah. And that is this episode of Rooster Fighter.
Well, I'll say one last thing, though. KG, after the blast that took out Yuji's arm, like, KG was kind of hit by some shrapnel, so he was, like, down for the count lookalike. But then at the very end here, he springs back up to action and says, "I'm not done yet." And then I think that's when the episode ends, right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
They're all like bloodied up and stuff too. So
things aren't looking good for our heroes.
I am looking forward to seeing Pyoko return, hopefully next episode. I think that could be cool. I want to see what's going on with that. And that's okay. There we go. Any other thoughts, Seda, about this episode, or are we good?
You know, obviously in another shonen obvious trope, like we're always escalating, you know, the conflict, right? And this Hikari is the most dangerous person they've faced so far. And, you know, how are they going to get over this hurdle? We'll see.
Yeah, we still haven't seen the mysterious guy with the wine glass yet either.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just would say this is a pretty typical shonen fight episode, but it was very well executed. It was good at animation. There was kind of the good banter and forth between Keiji and Keisuke, but they still managed to pull off the combo attack pretty well. Like, it's something we've all seen time and time again, but it just was well executed here. So I'm a fan, even though it's nothing I've seen before. It's great hamburger, if you want to say it. Like, very well done.
I don't think we're looking for the chicken sort of parody shonen to, you know, defy our expectations in terms of.
Sure, but like, yeah, it's well within our expectations, but I think well executed, and that matters. Execution matters.
Yeah, I would agree that this show is better than I was expecting because I couldn't know what to expect. You know what I mean? Like, I'm thinking, like, is this going to be a big joke? And while it is tongue-in-cheek, it's certainly taking itself seriously enough that it is fun to watch. So, okay. Well, let's move on to our next show on the block, Don to Don. Dandadan, Season 2, Episode 8. You can do it, Okarun.
Another battle episode.
Yeah, big battle. A whole episode of battling these musicians/composers. So I'm going to kind of paraphrase a bit here because there's just a lot of battle stuff. It's difficult to describe. So anyway, they're fighting. The musician composers are shooting musical notes at them. If you get hit by the musical notes, you have different effects. Happen to you, so they have to dodge that. Ira is using the power of the acrobatic silky quite effectively here and dodging everything. But unfortunately, Okaroon gets stopped by one of the musical notes. I forget what it's called, the break or whatever note. I forget what that note's called. But anyway, it's the one rest. That's like a pause.
The rest.
The rest, yeah. And it just makes them freeze in place, both him and Turbo Granny.
Yeah, Turbo Granny kind of mentions that basically, like, Ira has, like, found a rhythm and is able to dodge all of these notes. You need to find a rhythm. Think of a music. Think of some music that you know. And he's like, I don't know any music.
But then he's like, wait,
one song.
Yeah. I just heard a really good song like two episodes ago. And that was, of course, the heavy metal song that we saw. And so he starts using the power of metal's rhythm. And this allows him to save Ira. And she's able to kick one of the heads of these composers off. And it's almost like it's just like a doll's head. That's like just empty inside that he just pops off.
If we were more cultured, we would name these composers more accurately. I mean, they're all famous composers, but like I think Bach and maybe Beethoven's in there. But like, if we were more cultured, we could say, "Oh, she kicked off such and such's name." But yes, they've been fighting composers because only the power of metal can defeat classical music.
Yeah, it's Beethoven is definitely recognizable to me. He's the one on the piano in the whole episode. I'd recognize him for sure. He's kind of the one leading them.
I think Bach, Chopin, these are well-known figures, but we're just, yeah.
After the break, the composers start performing Symphony Number 9, and it literally is in the show.
Stage 2 of the boss battle, or phase 2, excuse me.
Yeah. And they kind of back up, get a little further away, and then they use this power to sort of summon this group of giant choir opera singers. These like literally like 100-foot tall opera singers appear. And as they sing, they start like just barfing out people. And these people come and rush at them. And I guess that's the choir.
So here I am thinking like, what the hell are these things? And then Ira's like, what the hell are these things?
Yes.
And then Turbo Granny's just like, ignore them. They're just, you know, distractions. You got to take out the guys on the stage.
I'm going to say something. I really, really like Don to Don. But sometimes it goes places where I'm like, it's so bizarre that I'm just questioning it to it where I'm like, why?
Because they can and it's cool.
I guess.
They do explain why they fight these ghosts of composers at the end of the episode, which I'm sure you'll get to.
They do explain that, but like the powers and some of the choices that this mangaka makes, I'm not against them, but it just is weird. Like weird almost to the point where it makes me think, are they just trying to be weird? Like, for example, here's another example. Every time Gigi transforms, he's in his underwear. And I'm like, why?
I mean, I don't see why that's a problem. Like, he burst out of his clothes, and so obviously you can't be naked because it's like a PG-13 manga or whatever. But
the creator made that choice. It doesn't happen in other shows. Like, he decided that he wanted his characters to do this, and I'm just like, okay.
Yeah, just some fan service for ladies, right, or something. I don't know.
I don't know.
Need to show him off.
I guess. It's just, at least that has like some modicum of sense, but like composers that create giant towering choir singers that puke out people. I mean, it gets so bizarre at points where I'm just sort of like, I'm like into it, but I'm also like really almost a little frustrated because I can't understand it.
Anyways, Ira is going to go play some Attack on Titan here while, Okaroon has to figure out how to take out the composers on the stage.
Okaroon gets in close, and as he's getting close, he's realizing he's not sure how he's going to beat these composers. And then Turbo Granny's like, what you need to do is you need to be able to do 5 attacks and 1 beat. If you can do that, because this is all this training's about, right? And so he is able to do that. He's able to complete 5 attacks within the span of 1 beat of his song, and then he defeats them.
Basically uses all out attack to do a rush charge and then adds a spin to it. So he hits all 5 of the remaining composers like all at once, basically.
Yeah. So the fight's over. He then thanks Ira And then the sort of classroom transforms back to its normal self, which is another thing. Like, where were they? Were they just in another dimension? Like, what was that? I don't know. But now they're back in the classroom and the lesson is over. And then we get a little bit here from Turbo Granny that kind of explains what really happened there to a certain extent. Apparently, it's not the ghosts. It's like the fear of the composers, that are the pictures of the composers on the wall from all the students who've had to study.
Yeah, it's a negative energy generated by all the students who had to study under these composers, and that negative energy kind of coalesced into these like phantoms that formed a pocket dimension within the school.
Yeah, exactly. And I did like, there was a comment from one of the characters to Turbo Granny is like about the fact that their school is so haunted, which is something I said like an episode or two ago. I'm like, man, their school's got lots of ghosts. We kind of come back to Seiko's house, and you know, they're getting ready to kind of, you know, unfortunately, they're going to try to exorcise Gigi.
Yeah, Momoji or whatever his name is kind of the buzzkill here, and he's like, we have to do the exorcism. I've even called those guys back, they'll be here tomorrow.
Yeah, they're basically all agreeing that the exorcism needs to be done, and they're basically telling Gigi so. And it's like, we got to do this, bro. Like, you have no choice. You want to have the blood of Seiko or Momo on your hands, right? So basically giving everyone the same page before eventually Iron and Okurun come back from their little training expedition.
Yep. They call him out. Gigi, and Okurun in particular calls Gigi outside. And he says, all right, I'm ready.
Iroh, get the water. We're going to do this.
We're going to do this one-on-one. Me versus the evil eye. Let's go. And that's where the episode ends, because it's like, I guess Okurun now has
got
the
power
confidence and the technique that he thinks could win.
Yep. Selling it how they all shown in the settled between men by punching each other in the face. Setting all the speeds, rather.
I really do hope this works, because I like the idea of Gigi having that power, but then him being able to control it. They've really been laying it on thick that it might not happen.
I think it would be surprising to me if he didn't maintain this power to some degree. I just don't know what that degree is.
Yeah.
Like, how much power will he have when this is like settled? Like, I highly doubt he's going to go back to being no powers at all.
Oh, I agree.
That would be weird. But I'm just like, how much control will he have? You know, what will he be able to do? Those sort
of they all we'll kind of have that though. Like, I mean, like Okurun and Iroh both have like reduced ability, right? They have the ability, but it's not the full ability.
Yeah, really, Momo's ability is the one that's kind of different from the rest, is she just has psychic powers where everyone else is kind of like possessed in a way.
Yeah.
So,
all right, pretty good episode. Again, it's out there. I think I was saying a lot of negative things earlier, and I don't want to give the wrong impression. It's not like I don't like this. I really like it. It's like still my favorite show on the block. I think this episode was very cool. I was really into it. It's just something I wanted to get off my chest about Don to Don, that like sometimes it goes places where I can't follow, where I'm like, this is too weird, or it feels weird for the sake of being weird, and it doesn't like there's no ever any good reasonable explanation for why things are happening. They just
Sometimes weird can be weird for like doing X for the sake of X can sometimes be deleterious. Like, you can go, you've seen it in plenty of media where they're just trying to be different, but then be different in a bad way.
One of my favorite things about Don to Don is that it is very original. And this is,
I would say,
this is that. So
I would say Don to Don for so far has been original or out there, either for the better or for the neutral, which I think is either way, I think is the best case scenario so far. So,
yeah. Okay. So that's Don to Don. Next week, we will see the big face off. Hopefully, Okurun has learned his trick. All right. Let's move on to the next show. It is, of course, Blue Lock. Blue Lock, episode 15, Devour. Okay, explain to me, why is it called Devour?
Throughout this episode, they kind of reframe Isagi's ability to be like he can sort of like learn the abilities of other people and kind of like take them. So I guess that's sort of like devouring them.
Okay.
Not really, but that's the closest I got.
Yeah, that fits more than anything I could think of. All right. The match is still going on, and Isaki is commenting that this is pretty much just a match between Baru and Nagi, that he and Naruhaya are not really contributing, right? They're just there. And throughout the ridiculous number of inner monologues that happens in this episode, Isaki...
That's pretty much this show.
It's pretty
much this episode, nonstop. But especially this episode.
Oh, I think it's every episode.
I think this episode can be summed up, I would say a lot of Blue Lock, but this episode especially can be summed up with Isagi making very obvious observations about soccer or like, body or whatnot, and then turning into something dramatic. I'm going to break myself down and rebuild myself and look at all these weird puzzle metaphors and imagery on the screen. And it's just he's saying to himself, "Oh, right, you and I can't see 360 degrees. I'm like, wow, good job, kid. You figured out
about 16 years. So when I was watching this and he's like, so basically his big like revelation that he comes to, he's like, aha, of course, off the ball movement, like positioning is super important. And it's just like, I'm like face palming here. Like, of course it is. Like, you didn't need Blue Lock to teach you that. But it's treated as if it's like, you know, he unlocked, you know, a third eye or something.
Yeah.
And of course, as I always say, take a drink every time someone on the show says evolve, and you'll be dead before the episode's over.
Yeah. Well, he does evolve a little bit here because he recognizes that, because he didn't know what Naruhaya's trick was, because back in when Naruhaya was on their team, remember that? No, nobody remembers that. But anyway, when Naruhaya was on their team, he never explained what his, I want to say gift, but that's not it, his like
ability.
Weapon,
weapon is what they call it.
His weapon. Yeah, his weapon. He never revealed it. But Isagi has figured it out. It's that Naruhaya is very good at getting into people's blind spots. He can hide in people's blind spots. And then I wrote down, because this is complicated, but unnecessarily complicated. But Isagi says the other thing he's learned, that he needs to be off the ball. Off the ball movement is important. I guess that means that you're not near the ball. Is that what that means, I guess?
Well, just be aware of what's going around you, and like, even when you don't have possession of the ball, which I thought he did a pretty good job of back a few episodes ago when he said his ability was my Sharingan lets me see the entire field. So it seemed like he did have this ability at one point, but then like I guess in this narrow context, he has to reapply it or something. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm not fully convinced that this is something he wasn't aware of and is like a shocking revelation and the next step in his evolution of being the best striker. It feels like kind of like this is something you learn in like grade school soccer. Like, not everyone can have the ball at the same time. You have to play the field, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Well, anyway, he's consumed Naruhaya's ability. He's understood the off the ball movement. And so now he's able, like Crocodile says, to rewrite himself. I'm going to completely break myself down and rewrite. And we see the metaphor of the puzzle pieces.
I think this is a little later, but I wrote this down because he's like, he kind of recognizes that, like, the way that the show frames this, I'm an average Joe. I only have this ability to like do a sure strike or whatever. Oh, and then like
Joe cross average Joe.
Yeah, he's like average Joe times itself, and it's so funny. Average Joe
that's
times itself
how math works.
Yeah,
squared average Joe. He gets super genius. I'm like,
he literally says, he literally like yells to himself in his like inner monologue, tense, extreme voice, like average Joe times itself. And he like overlays like his, I guess, strike power with Naruhaya's, I guess, off the ball power. And like, this is my next evolution. It's very over the top.
Yeah.
But over top in a dumb way. There's lots of over top shows in a fun way. This is kind of dumb.
Yeah, this is a little bit silly.
Kinda. It is dumb. Like, I'm not offended, but it is pretty stupid.
Yeah, this show is kind of, it's not great. it's I am enjoying it again in the same context that I kind of enjoyed Food Wars. Even though I've said this before that like Food Wars had more compelling characters.
Oh, I would say until the last arc, if we're discounting the last arc, Food Wars is definitely much better than
Food Wars. I mean, it's more like, but it's always like a guilty pleasure kind of good. Yeah. Like it's like, oh, this show is terrible, clearly, but it's fun to watch. This show is just kind of terrible, but I kind of enjoy watching the terribleness of this show.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's dumb, but kind of an enjoyable dumb.
It is a show that is so full of itself. You know what I mean? Like in so far of being like, I don't know. It just thinks it's the greatest thing ever, and I'm just kind of chuckling. Anyway, sorry. Any fans of Blue Lock out there? I'm not trying to be a jerk, but that's how I feel. Anyway, he's able to pass it to Nagi, and then they get or maybe he got the shot. I forget. I think he gets the shot. Anyway, it's tied 4-4. And then there's like a moment right before the commercial break where Nagi's coming up to him and kind of realizing something's going on with Isagi. And then Isagi just tells Nagi to shut up. there's moments in this show where Isagi just becomes like an asshole in the moment where he's just like, get away from me.
It's the monster inside.
Oh, yeah, maybe it true. Is. Like he's also drink Cherokee, actually, now that I think about it. Episode title of the episode should be Drink Cherokee.
Yeah, it is. The Gin Cherokee episode.
Anyways, we get a very super important flashback.
Oh, yeah. So, okay. Well, okay. Before I go into this, I just want to say that when they started this flashback, I was like, oh, no, here we go again. They're going to redeem this guy. But no, they don't. They don't, which I'm happy to say they don't. But we'll get to that. So
I don't know if Naruhaya never really needed like redeeming. He was just kind of a nothing. Redeeming.
It was just his backstory.
Redeeming is the wrong term. Evil. I'm sorry. Redeeming is the wrong term. I meant to say they were going to keep him. Like, I thought they were going to be like, he's going to be on the team again. They're not doing that.
Oh, okay. As opposed to make the obvious choice for picking Borrow, you thought the show would make a swerve.
That's the one thing I'll give the show. I will give the show a little clap because, yes, they did the logical thing. I think I was fully expecting them in that last moment, which we'll get to, where he would have been like, no, Naruhaya, I'm going to choose you because I see the potential in you. They didn't do that. They were like, no, Baru's clearly better than you are, dude. You're out.
Anyways, this whole flashback sequence feels very pro forma to me. It's just kind of like, did we need any of this?
No.
Well, this is probably the last time we're going to see Naruhaya in the show at all, right? So
yeah, but like, I don't know if this character needed any sort of fleshing out, but they decided, yes, they're going to flesh him out. But it's kind of like the most basic, most fleshing out that you could possibly do. And long story short,
it's not fleshing out. It's a pity party. It's a pity party for this character.
Yeah, but I mean, just speaking, you know, mechanically, it does give him like, okay, here's what his motivation is, and like, so he has that. Is it interesting? No. Is it compelling? No. But it's there. He lives with all of his siblings. His parents passed away. He's doing this to raise money. Like, he wants to be a pro so he can support his family. You know, like, sure, that's fine on paper, but it didn't matter.
His parents died. Yeah, whatever. Sad sob story for a character that you think we're supposed to care about, but I don't really care about him because, again, I don't remember him. Anyway, back into the match. The bad guys, or the other team, I should say, are on the offensive. Naruhaya, after his flashback, feels energized for what he's going to do, but Baru's like, screw you. Doesn't listen. He doesn't want to pass it. He shoots and misses. He misses his shot. Oh, by the way, this is something I wanted to mention. I was flabbergasted in this episode when Blue Lock Man blocked the ball.
He can defend.
When it's narratively convenient. When it's narratively convenient, you can defend.
I think he's probably blocked one ball in all the time he's existed. So. I mean, during a match.
Even like shortly later here, Naruhaya like takes a shot. I forget exactly, you know, what happened first, what happened second, what happened third. But like there's a point where Naruhaya is like, this is it. This is my moment. I have to get this goal. And he takes a shot and he misses. But it's not even blocked by Blue Lock Man. He just kind of missed and hit the
he just misses.
Post. He just hit the post.
This is one time to shine. He didn't shine. Well, it tells you everything there is to know about the character, isn't it?
I think it would have been even funnier if Blue Lock Man had blocked his shot. But yeah,
if I remember correctly, he just like hit the post and like, nope, you missed.
Yeah, that's what happened. Exactly.
Then Naruhaya tries. He has a moment. He tries to steal Isagi's direct shot ability, but he misses as well.
I think that's what I was just referring to. Like, yeah. I might be being confused which shot was which, but yeah, it does like this big dramatic Narahaya try, you know, this is his last ditch effort, big shot, this is his chance, and he fails.
Isagi's putting the pieces together, he's evolving, his ego is rising.
Average Joe times itself.
Yeah, Average Joe times itself, and he gets into Baru's blind spot. Oh my gosh. And yes, he beats Baru and wins, and that's 4-5. They win. Narahaya breaks down and starts crying.
Very sad.
Isagi kind of thanks him, and he's like, hey, you know, you taught me something. And then like Narahaya is like, don't give me your pity or whatever.
Thanks for the ability.
And then it's like, this was the moment where I thought like Isagi was going to be generic protag and be like, well, I'll help you. But he doesn't. He's like, no, I'm going to pick Baru. He's way better than you. And they do.
I agree with you. I did have a little bit of like hesitation in my mind. Like, is he really going to like just pick Narahaya out of like pity or whatever? Like, no, I like to do this. But I was actually kind of amused at how like kind of nonchalantly he's just kind of like in that moment was like, we choose Baru. Like, of course we do. That was the only choice.
Yeah. I will admit that that tinge of worry was in the back of my mind too, but I was like, nah, this show can't be this dumb. Like it has to. But thankfully, they made the right choice prevail.
Now they have to deal with, you know, this ball hog shot king guy, but he was still the better choice.
So. Yeah,
I will admit the end skit with them arguing over the sleeping spot was actually kind of funny. I don't know why, but that got a good laugh out of me.
So yeah, we've got Baru on the team, and then there was something else I was going to mention about that. Oh, I just wanted to mention quickly that Narahaya is out. Like he's out of Blue Lock now. Like,
yeah, this might be the last time we see this character. Yeah,
I'm pretty sure. Yeah. I would assume so.
That's my assumption. Hence, probably why they want to actually spend any time with that "quote unquote" backstory.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's this show's version of a death flag, basically.
Well, no, I think the traitor guy got a backstory just before.
Yeah,
no, that's true. I guess what I'm saying is the flashback in this episode was his death flag, right?
Sure. Yeah, I agree. Not for every character, but for this character, yes.
Yeah.
And then there's just one more scene in this episode, with like, you can tell these characters are important because they have like colored hair. Chigiri and Kunigami, they're looking for a third. They're like, oh, that Isagi and Bachira, you know, took off without us. We need to, you know, catch up to them. So they're looking for a third, and they find Ryo, who was like, I think that's his name, Ryo, who was like the guy who was basically using Nagi for his ambitions. And of course, without Nagi, this guy's kind of a sad sack. But they kind of recognize, hey, you're good at passing, right? You can help us out.
Yeah, Ryo definitely has jilted lover vibes, as we also see in the After Time special, where he keeps picking up part of toothbrush to see if he should forgive Nagi or kick Nagi's ass. And it's just kind of like the flower thing. Does she love me? Does she not love me? And so that was also kind of funny, honestly.
Yeah, and that's the episode. One last little note about this episode is that for some reason, inexplicably, they showed the full ending and it wasn't even sped up.
This is the new ending. So yes. I actually had to remind myself, like, wait, we got a new opening last week. Did we not get a new ending last week? No, because last week they did like a special, you know, where the credits play over the final scene type of thing where there was no ending. So this was the first time they played this ending. So I guess they just gave it the full ending treatment. I would imagine next week it'll be sped up.
Yeah. Although I just want to be on the record that Toonami doesn't do that.
Not like often.
Typically they don't air full endings when it's a first run, they typically don't.
Well, I think a lot of times up to distributor, right? So that's kind of plays a big role.
Maybe this episode was a little shorter than some of the other ones. So it's strange.
I think they maybe have done this a couple of times, but not common.
No,
I mean,
it's
obviously
not common.
Toonami's been around for a long time. So, and the ending, I think the ending itself is, it's like them looking wistfully out of rainy glass windows or whatever.
It's just like the opening. It was just fine. Not terrible, but not doesn't blow me away either.
It's literally like all the different players like looking out windows with like rainy glass, like very solemnly and wistfully. And, you know, it's very ending vibe. So I don't even remember the music. Probably something.
Yeah, I mean, this show is no Perot studio where you get like a lackluster show with amazing openings and endings.
Black Clover.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so that's it. Episode 15, Blue Lock. Isagi has devoured Naruhaya's abilities, and he's evolving, continuing to evolve. All right, I think we are ready to move on to the next episode. Crocodile is going to head out. Thank you for being here, Crocodile. He's dropped a couple of potential nominations in there. We'll talk about that towards the end. So, all right, let's move on to Tokyo Revengers. Tokyo Revengers, episode 15, No Pain, No Gain. Takamichi is at school, and his friends then arrive. Remember his four friends? Akun.
Akun's the only one who's, like, important.
Yeah, he's there. But we do get a lot from this other guy. I forget his name, who's, like, the expert on gangs.
He's, like, the nerd. I don't know his name, but he's the nerd. Or the, maybe nerd's not the right word, because he may not be smart, but he's, like, he's knowledgeable about the gangs, and he gives us a little, like, kind of lesson on, like, here's the structure of Hanma, or Hanma's one of the characters, but of Tomon, of the five divisions, you know, the division limp commander who left, the new one that came in, the gang, Mobius, is, like, no longer, they kind of got disbanded. He kind of goes through all of this.
Hanma is now the acting commander. He's an acting commander, but not in charge. He's second in command or something.
So that's a Valhalla. Yeah. Right. And they even mention that, like, well, who's the commander of Valhalla? And it's like, no one knows.
I'll tell you, I think it is.
Who?
It's Kisaki.
Yeah, that, like, kind of, yeah, double agent sort of thing.
Yeah, that's my feel. That's my thinking. Anyway. We also learned that this guy with the tattoo on his neck is Kazutora. He's Valhalla's number three. He comes to the school and finds Takamichi, which freaks him out. He's like, oh my God, it's this guy we're talking about.
Now, this is the guy that we talked about in the last episode as, like, Takamichi saw his photo, like a slightly older photo, and he saw the young version of this guy in the photo. But he doesn't realize that this is the same guy, at least not yet.
Not yet, which is weird, but because at the very end of the episode, he puts it together, and I was thinking, like, really?
Like, he's got a big dragon tattoo on his neck that's pretty unmistakable.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, okay, if there's one thing I can tell you about this show is that Takamichi isn't very, he's kind of slow.
Like, to pick sometimes up on I things. Think it's fine for characters not to be, like, omnipotent or whatever, but it's just like, you just saw his photo with, like, a big tattoo on his neck, and here comes in a guy with a big tattoo on his neck. Like, you don't see that every day. I don't think it'd be that hard to put it together.
There were multiple comments in our group watch thread of people being like, the show is hard to watch because of how inept Takamichi is. Like, your protagonist is too inept for his own good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, this guy, Kazutora, is here, and he's like, hey, Takamichi, I've come to get you. We're going to go back to Valhalla's base. I want to take you with me. He goes outside, and he sees these two guys with broken legs, and he's like, yeah, I broke their legs. And then Takamichi, who, in a moment of clarity and insightfulness, points out, why would you guys even follow someone who broke your legs? And I was thinking the same thing. And then the thug whose legs were broken said the dumbest thing I think I've ever heard, where he goes, what, are you going to question our boss, Kazutora? I'm like, that's okay. That's all it takes, huh? Okay.
And at this point, we don't really know, the viewer nor Takamichi, know why this guy came to get him. We learn, but at this point, we're like, he's just like, come to Valhalla with me.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
And that's what happens. So they take them to Valhalla's base,
which is like an abandoned arcade.
Yeah. It was kind of neat. So when we come back from the commercial, we see that when they arrive, and it's an abandoned arcade, but in the window, there is like a mannequin, a headless mannequin with angel's wings. And
I forget if it was a mannequin or like graffiti, but yeah, he puts it together.
Yeah, they're called the Headless Angels. The Valhalla's nickname is the Headless Angels because they don't know who's in charge.
Yeah, and even on some of their like jackets, their little, they have a little icon that's like, it looks like it's like a little like angel icon with wings but no head.
Yeah.
So they, on their jackets, they have that too.
Right. So when they walk in, they see that Baji is being tested. And the first thing is that Baji has to beat up somebody, in which he's,
yeah, it's, they say it's like a vice commander of Toman, but you know, it's just some, no, it's not a real character, it's just some guy.
Yeah. So. Then Takamichi's introduced. Everybody there, of course, hates Toman, so they're all yelling, kill him, kill him, kill him.
And this is kind of a minor thing, but they show Hanma, who, for all we know, like, from our perspective, he's the highest ranking official or character we know in this gang. We know there's someone above him, but we don't know who it is. We can guess. But it shows like a couple of characters that are sitting next to him. They all have like sort of unique designs. Like there's a guy with like a bald head and like a curly Q on his face or whatever. And like, I don't know if these guys are important. They're probably like other commanders.
Yeah.
But yeah. Hanma's kind of sitting up top, some sort of staircase. And yeah, long story short, Baji is kind of defecting gangs here, right? And you know, they're basically like, we needed a witness to basically testify that Baji is not trying to trick us or isn't being duplicitous, and he's really defecting. So what did he say in that meeting, Takamichi? That's why they brought him as a witness.
Yeah, he's like, I can vouch that he did say this, that he was leaving. And then this is good enough for Kuzatora, and he's like, okay, and Hanma, and they're like, okay, Baji, you are now accepted officially into Valhalla. And this, of course, freaks Takamichi out, because he's like, this is the worst thing that can happen to him. Yeah.
So Takamichi does his Takamichi thing where he like calls out like, wait, Baji, why do you want to do this? You're a founding member of Toman. Like, why are you defecting? Why are you being a traitor? And Baji kind of says also the obvious thing that Takamichi should have realized, like, yeah, I'm a founding member. That doesn't matter. Also, by the way, that guy's also a founding member. You didn't know that.
Yeah, and this is when he puts it together. He's like, oh my God, that's the guy from the photograph. I don't know their name. Now I know who they are. And then the final thing that happens in this episode is we get a flashback to the summer of 2003, when Mikey was only 12 years old, but the head of Toma.
It shows a bunch of these like kids, like they're 12. It shows a bunch of these like the founding members of Toman, like literally first year of middle school, and it's like showing their ages, and they're like 12 or maybe 13. Like I think like
12 and 13.
But still like barely teenagers. And they're like, yeah, we're creating a gang. Like, I don't know. It's hard for me to take that seriously. Like a gang of like sixth graders. Like, yeah, you enjoy your gang, kids. You have your milkshakes. Or whatever.
Yeah, as they had their milkshakes, but yet they're also getting official jackets made.
Yeah, like who parent is helping you out here?
Yeah, and that was what it was. Is that's what them getting the jackets, and then they get the photograph that we've seen before taken in that moment.
I think the whole show being like middle school biker gangs is a little hard for me to like.
I couldn't agree more. It is the like, dumbest decision. At least
make them high schoolers where they're like 16, 17. That'd be a little bit more believable. But no, we're like 13, 14, 15 year olds. Like, okay.
It's the biggest detriment to the show outside of Takamichi is that these characters are too young, but then act like they're too old.
So like, for example, excuse me. Like we saw one kid beating up another kid in an abandoned arcade. But like when you think about it, this is like maybe like an eighth grader punching a seventh grader.
Yep.
Like I don't know. Oh, yeah. Like to a blood. Like I'm sure middle schoolers get into fights or whatever. But this is like all these serious like gang politics. Like hard for me to like suspend my disbelief for that.
Yeah, it takes me out of it every time I think about it, especially with, like I said, 12-year-old Mikey here, who looks, I will admit, in the flashback, they did look slightly younger.
Draken's still pretty big for being 13.
Yeah, but even he looked a little younger. Like
a little bit, younger. Yeah.
But to the detriment of the show, because again, I can't take them seriously as gang members when they look like this.
And also, like, we're going, like, when we were entering the arcade here, it showed like all these like kind of nobody Valhalla gang members, And like some of them are like smoking cigs and whatnot. And you think about like these guys are like 14.
Although you wouldn't know it. I mean, when you look at them, they look like they could be 18 or 19.
Yeah, like if you told me this was like set in high school and these are high schoolers, like Takemichi's a little small, but still, like I would believe that. Like middle school?
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. Like again, Draken looks like a high schooler. He doesn't look like he's in middle school or would be.
Yeah,
it's weird. What a weird choice. I don't know what the deal is with that.
I also kind of I always kind of felt similarly for like Sailor Moon being set in middle school too. Like, you know, they can be high school.
Yeah, I kind of forgot about that, but you're right.
Like Usagi's also only like 14. Like, you can make her 16.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, well, that's it for Tokyo Revengers. They need to age up this show. It's too late now, I guess, but anyway. All right, let's talk about the final premiere of this week, and that, of course, is One Piece. One Piece, episode 777. To the Reverie, Princess Vivi and Princess Shirahoshi. Yeah, so we kind of pick up where we left off last week. We see that Vivi and company are preparing to leave Alabasta.
Yeah, the first half of this episode is, as you have written in your notes, as well as in my notes, it's just a recap of the finale of the Alabasta. Well, not just the finale, but basically the highlights of the Alabasta arc. Yeah.
Yeah, the big moments. The only other thing of note here is that Hina, the Marine, called the Black Cage, Hina, is the Marine captain that's escorting them to Marijuana.
I'm sure I've seen her before. Like, some of these Marine captains, they just kind of appear very seldomly in the show. I trust, you know, Oda, like, in terms of consistency of, like, the Marines and their positions. Like, they just don't show up
often. So. Yeah, Hina shows up quite often, actually. Yeah. She's here.
Like,
she's around.
This pink-haired cigarette. Yeah.
Yeah. Her gimmick, too, is that her entire crew are all, like, infatuated with her, which they do a little bit of that. Mm-hmm.
Now, I have written down in my notes, this is one of those things where I'm, like, trying to rack my brain about what we knew in Alabasta, because that was so long ago, right? Like, 600 episodes ago or whatever.
Yeah.
So they're on the boat. I guess this is shortly after the flashback. So they come back to the present day. Vivi and her dad are on their way to the Reverie, which we get a little bit of a explanation that it's like an event every 4 years where the kingdom of the world meet and want at Marie Joie, or however you pronounce it. Mm-hmm. But her dad mentions something along the lines of, like, he wants to learn what the Nefertari lineage did to the world so many years ago. So I'm like, because it's Vivi Nefertari or whatever her last name is. Like,
Nefertari,
Nefertari, like that family. So like that family did something years or centuries ago. And I'm like, we don't know what that is, right? Or what he's referring to. But he mentioned something like that.
Well, like, that's their name. I mean, aside from that.
But yeah, but he mentions like they did something. Like, well, what did they do?
Oh, okay.
You know, like, they were just the royal family of Alabasta. But like, were they involved in something more important or bigger or more sinister or something, or like their family in the past? Like, I'm not aware of this. So,
yeah, I don't think you would.
He mentioned something along the lines, and I'm like, I don't think this has been brought up before, but he hinted at it now. So.
Yeah, so when we come back from the commercial, we are introduced to a character I did not expect to see. It's Steli, or in this case, King Steli, and like his like wife or mistress or whoever named Sally. Now, if you don't remember who this character is.
I don't remember this character.
Okay, so when we last saw him, he was like a young boy. He was this guy who was adopted into Sabo's family during Sabo's flashback. He was a real shitheel character.
I mean, he was kind of a shitheel here too. He's like, this room sucks.
Yeah, that's his thing. Yeah, I can't exactly remember the details, but he was like terrible to Sabo. But anyway, they're in Logue Town. because they're getting ready to go to the Reverie as well. And then we get like the narrator coming in and he kind of explains what the Reverie is. It's like, oh, every 4 years, all the kings of the world get together in Marie-Joie to have a big conference where they talk about the world and the state of the world and stuff. We cut over to a place you never see in One Piece, which is the Kano Kingdom.
Is that a China kingdom?
Exactly. Yeah, it's their China.
Yeah.
It looks like it. Yeah, we learn that Don Sai is going to the Reverie. And then we also then cut to Fishman Island, and we see crying Shirahoshi, and then her family. Yes, that's true. Or what did they? What's the nickname? Somebody in the thread said it was.
Luffy always called her like Crybaby or something. Or
no, it was like Cryhoshi or
Cryhoshi, something maybe,
something like that.
But yeah, she, but yeah, she cries. That's what she does.
Anyway, her family's trying to convince her to go, and her father. I forgot how all the fishmen always have like, not all of them actually, the oldest son doesn't do this, but all the other ones have like the weird quirks to when they speak.
Yeah. There's some sort of like catch word and then they say their sentence.
Yeah. And then like the king is always ends everything in Jamon for some reason.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, he's like, don't forget Shirahoshi that this is the wish. This was the dream of your mother before she died that we would return to the surface. So, and then Shirahoshi, we get the Shirahoshi flashback to when Luffy promised to take her to a forest and all that stuff, made the promise. All right, so everybody's going to the Reverie. Meanwhile, back on the Thousand Sunny, we see all the people who jumped are now like recovering from that jump. They're all like, they've been so scared of dying that they are like kind of, they're out of breath and just like throwing up and stuff, I guess.
Yeah, it's a little bit goofy where like Nami is so tired, she's literally laying on like the grass, the lawn there, and like Chopper is trying to drive the ship and she's like, turn starboard, and he's like, is this starboard? Like, no, that it's the other way.
Yeah,
so
everybody's just beat because Luffy decided to jump thousands of feet. It doesn't really explain how they landed there. They're just there.
Yeah, they're exhausted for some reason.
Yeah, because they were scared. That's why they're exhausted. They're all like, and then like I think Brooke makes like a skull joke.
Yeah, he's like, you know, my heart can't take it, but I don't have a heart. No.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Like you said, Nami's like, no, you need to turn the other direction. Somebody turn the ship. And then someone comes jumping out and says, I'll do it. And it's Carrot.
Here's why Carrot is popular. Because she joined the crew. Sort of.
You know, she's really, here.
She's here. And I gather she sticks around for a while.
Yeah, but she, Carrot is in to everyone's shock. What the heck? What are you? You're not supposed to be here. And Luffy does like a face and everybody's freaked out.
This would have been like, I think, a really cool surprise had you been reading the manga like up to date at this time. This was what, 12 years ago or whatever. Where like, you know, like we had even talked about like in the Zo arc, Carrot is sort of just a background character. Like she does like one thing and says a few things, but you know, isn't that important? And then just all of a sudden, Carrot is suddenly much more important. So.
Yeah, they really do a disservice to this moment by having that previous episode where she has the
kind of the musing to herself, like I want to travel the world, you know, like
I want to go out to sea. Yeah.
Whereas in the original manga, it would have been more of a surprise for her to be here. Now, like obviously, anyone watching the anime, even when the anime was new, would know that she joins, but still.
Yeah, well, one thing that was really cool about the manga, I remember, was when we, in the last episode, when they were leaving, which, by the way, the last episode was all canon from beginning to end. When that manga came out, because every week when a manga issue comes out, people, you know, they analyze it with a microscope, right?
Let me guess what you're going to say. Carrot wasn't there?
Correct.
Like, so people might have noticed her absence? Like,
yes, that's exactly right. And they were like, wait a minute. And before this happened, people were like, wait a minute, where's Carrot? She's not there to see them off. Is she going? Is she going to be on the ship? Yep, they were right. She's there. But it was more of a surprise in the manga because we didn't really know I think maybe she dropped a line somewhere about the fact that she thought that the Straw Hats were cool or going out to sea would be cool.
But it wasn't so like obvious telegraph. As like the anime filler-ish scene kind of
ruins that a little bit because you're just sort of expecting it now. Yeah, they kind of sluiced it out. People were like, wait a minute, Kara isn't in this chapter. She should be there. What's going on? I think that's another thing, too, that's interesting about that I remember is that even though she hadn't like been on the ship yet, people were already kind of shining to her a little bit. Like even the little brief thing she was in the manga, people were like, where's Carrot? Because they kind of liked her design, I guess.
I mean, yeah, she's got a cool design. She's literally a bunny girl. And, you know, like her first introduction was she blocked one of Zoro's attacks or dodged one of Zoro's attacks. Like, whoa, she can do something. So
anyway, she is here now. And we'll see more of that next week. And for a long time, actually. Yep. She's around. Should be fun. All right. So that's also, it for One Piece.
Not that important, but also Pedro is also on the ship. I think the only thing he says in this episode is like, what have I gotten myself into?
Yeah.
He's around.
Yeah, Pedro's there.
Oh, and the other lion turtle guy. What's his name?
Peckham's.
Yeah.
So yeah, we got three minks on the ship at the same time, actually. Mm-hmm. All right. So that's it. You know, again, we're in the transition period between arcs here.
I don't mind the meanwhile type stuff because it's kind of interesting to see like the world. I mean, that's really the most interesting part about One Piece. You know, the thing about the Alabasta flashback, like they show the scene where they raise their fists in the air. But like, you know, even though I haven't like watched it recently, like I feel like the original version of that scene was better. Like, obviously,
you know, it's interesting. So it's worth pointing out. Like, this was reanimated, right?
Yeah, it was reanimated, but like, obviously, they're not going to be as like thorough and dramatic the second time around, perhaps. But like, I think this is like way better the first time. Like, not just obviously being the first time, but I just think even like animation, composition, music, you know. The second time is just kind of like, oh yeah, remember this? It's whatever. I could have done without it.
Yeah. All right. So that's it for One Piece. Let's move on to our next segment, which is, of course, Flavor Alerts.
Play Flavor Alert.
Potential award nominations.
Even if we don't nominate anything this week, we at least need to just have a brief conversation about if there's anything worth nominating.
Yeah, we did not add anything last week, I believe.
No. Now, Crocodile did say in the chat that he usually nominates things he just suggests. And he says, maybe the big rooster fight because of the animation. Well, it's pretty hype. I mean, it was well animated. Yeah, what do you think?
I think it's worth putting in the best fight nomination. Best fight, rooster or chicken versus Yuji? Is that his name?
Yeah, Yuji. Yeah. Okay.
Sure, why not nominate it?
Sure. Yeah, not bad. Okay, so I'll put in chickens versus Yuji. Rooster fighter. Okay.
What about for best ability? Actually, maybe should we nominate both Keiji's and Kisuke's ability?
I mean, I would definitely nominate Keiji's ability. Let's do that. I got to look it up.
I think we should. I think we should just nominate both the Kokokoro beam as well as the 10 inner gates or whatever the chicken version is called. I think it's worth nominating both.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Let me look them up real quick here. Rooster Fighter.
I tried looking it up, but the Rooster Fighter fandom wiki is letting me down. It's not filled out.
Yeah, I've written it down before. Yeah, it's funny because like when you do a search for it, it's literally the Japanese version of cockadoodle-doo.
Yeah.
But they don't use cockadoodle-doo in the show. They use whatever Japanese word they use. It's like koko or something like that. Well, I'll just write it down for now. I'll fix it later. So because we're recording. But anyway, I'll just write down koko. And then I think it was something chicken leg.
Well, not just that, but also just like his Kaioken ability.
Wouldn't that be called, that's called, I named it earlier. It's called The Righteous Egg. It's either that or The Phoenix Flame.
Yeah, I The Righteous Egg is kind of like the property they have. The Phoenix Flame is like when unlocked it. And like, I don't know if the ability has a separate name, you know, the semantics behind how it's named. But whatever that ability is, I just think it's like, okay, this is good enough to nominate. I don't know if it's going to win, but good enough to nominate.
Okay, well, KG's, Coco, and then, Kisuke's. I'll just call down a Kisuke's ability for now, and I'll look it up later.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. I think he says it in this episode. I just have to look at the subtitles.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think I feel like I want to nominate the Don to Don fight.
Oh,
just because I thought it was weird.
No, I'm with you on that. It was just kind of a little bit kind of out. And we already, I think the Don to Don fights we have nominated are more interesting, both, I think, in many ways, visually and just kind of like thematically and emotionally. So,
character male.
Worst character, Takami.
We've got him already.
Worst character, Naruhaya. Honestly. Honestly, let's nominate him. He's pretty bad.
All right. Yeah.
Like, not only is the character himself kind of bad, I just think the way that the show tried to, like, the writer tried to, like, reintroduce the character and, like, write them into the plot and have them, like, contribute, it just, none of it really worked. Like, they were just, it was just not done well. So, and, like, the way the backstory was kind of shoehorned in. Yeah, I just think, in terms of just, like, I think it was poorly written. Yeah. I think it's
good. All right. I'm gonna put Naruhaya who?
They actually said his like first name at some point, like one of his like siblings did. I had no idea what it was. Because their family name is Naruhaya, of course, but anything from Tokyo? No, nothing in Tokyo Avengers I think was good enough or bad enough for a nomination.
Just double checking here. No, I we complained a lot about the stuff in Tokyo Revengers this week, but I don't really think that fits into a category, what we discussed, unless you can think of one. It's just the concept of like what.
Yeah, we were more writing. We were more criticizing characters and premise, not like a moment.
Right.
And we already have Takamichi nominated as worst character. He is set.
Yeah, we need more worst characters, though. We've got two now. But yeah, okay. All right.
Best villain. We haven't really had, like in Rooster Fighter, we have, like, a couple of villains. But then, like, Don to Don, we haven't really had, like, a villain. Like, I guess, like, the Evil Eye is our villain right now, but, like, not really a villain. And we had like the mom, the whatever that family mom person, Subterranean. But yeah, we haven't really had like an obvious like villain. I mean, in like we know who the villain in Tokyo Revengers like is, but haven't really done villainy things yet. So yeah, that category is still blank for nominations this year.
Oh, I have another. How about this? How about Blue Lock Man for best name?
Oh yeah. Sure, because that's what they call him. Like in universe, is Blue Lock Man.
Yeah,
like, even the characters refer to him as that.
It's goofy.
What about best character design? Like I added Riruka, who showed up like in one episode in Bleach, and she was wearing like a bunny hoodie. I don't know. Like Tokyo Revengers, they kind of have like a uniform.
Yeah,
like, some of them
everybody
wear it
just
slightly
looks
differently.
The same. I mean. I kind of want to say Keiji, but he doesn't. He's just a rooster. He's just
do
a
it.
Rooster.
Nominate him, Keiji, just for fun.
All right,
just
we'll do it.
Joke. No, he's a rooster. Keisuke, not though. He's kind of a good looking rooster.
Yeah, you know what? One thing I did want to mention that I think is kind of neat about Keiji's design is that half the time when you look at him, you can't see his eyes.
Yeah,
he's like his eyes are covered.
It's a cool more, look. Heroic.
Yeah. You know what? Screw that. I'm going to put him on there.
No, I think
I like Kayski's design. I think it's kind of neat.
Like Kayski or KG?
Kayski.
Oh, okay.
From Rooster Fighter.
Yeah. I like KG more. But...
Really? Oh, I think Kayski looks cooler. We'll put them both on. What do you think?
Sure, why not? It'll all be right. Fun.
We can knock them off later.
We can be a little silly. But like Mikey does like his whole like jacket without the arms through the arms type thing, you know, that's
Draken is the coolest looking character from the show to me.
Yeah, I was actually thinking Draken earlier. Sure, go ahead and add him. We need some nominations. We're like almost halfway through the year. So and you know, we're not quite almost, but we're more than halfway through the first season.
Yeah, Mikey just looks like a young kid to me. Nobody else looks really above average, but Draken looks cool. I think I like his haircut.
And he's kind of a unique design with like the half shaved head or whatever. Like that's pretty unique. When I think of character designs in Blue Lock, so we have a lot of characters in Blue Lock. The one that comes to mind for me is Chiguri, kind of being a little bit more feminine in the pink long hair. And I think one person even called him like, it was sort of an insult. It wasn't too bad. It was kind of like sissy or something, but it wasn't that. Like they referenced that, you know, he's got kind of a girlish look. But yeah, I'm just thinking if we were to nominate any Blue Lock character for best design, like Isagi's kind of normal looking. There's a, you know, Bachira's got like the double hair color kind of fin type thing going on. Kunigami is just a big guy with like
just a lot of pretty boys.
Yeah. Chiguri is the one I think is like the most striking. I mean, yeah.
Chiguri.
Yeah, sure. Nominate him. Why not?
I mean, I will, but I'm just going to look at him again because I have to remember which one he is. He's the one. He's the guy who I always think he's got the voice of Senku.
Yeah. And he's got like the pink flowing long hair. So.
Okay.
Any characters in... No. Okay. We have Draken from Tokyo Revengers. Okay. We've added a handful of nominations. We don't... Out of all of our categories that need nominations, I think villain. The only show or the only category that doesn't have one is villain. But we haven't really had a good villain this year.
No, maybe we'll get one when we get that wine tasting glass holding guy, the leader of the devils, maybe. We'll see.
Yeah, because the other devils are just, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, they're just generic, cocky. Yeah.
All right. We had a good handful. I think we're good.
Sounds good. All right. Well, let's wrap it up. That's going to be episode 475. Thank you for being here, Seda.
Yep. No problem.
All right. And I want to thank Crocodile for being here earlier. We'll be back next week for the same lineup again. Getting close to the finale of Rooster Fighter, so looking forward to see where they go with this, whether it'll be a cliffhanger or what. So look forward to that. And until then, later.